I popped myself a beer or a cold libation. Let me tell you how I wrote this little theme. I went and took a call from Brother Jason, and he tells me that he has a little dream. He says he needs a backwards intro to begin his podcast, and I ask him, what you got? He said, I'll start off with some talking and some movie clips of popcorn fighting, fantasy explorations and some groundless exploitation. Kickstarts that I'm watching and some blind unboxing, school month or movie marathon. Sometimes I'll let the dogs come on, contest and of course you know it's all about games. That's a slogan, let's just start with the name. It's the Nerds RPG Variety Podcast. With the other Jason.
Welcome to the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. Today, I've got an interview with a Kickstarter creator. I have a little bit of mush mouth during this interview, so I'll apologize in advance for that. Let's get into it. Joining me today to talk about his new Kickstarter is Paul, who I'm sure all of you know from Wandering DMs, and you've probably read his blog. Paul's been around. You've been blogging for, what, 25 years? How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, thanks. Doing good. I don't know if it was quite 25 years. I started that blog back in 2010 when I first got into old school Dungeons & Dragons and was exploring that.
But you blogged before that, right? You had a blog prior to that.
Oh gosh, I think you're right. I think I did have a personal blog that probably, you know, you're really dredging up the memories here from probably migrated there from like LiveJournal, if people still remember that.
So you've been around the whole time for the OSR, G+, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I guess let's start just at the beginning, just kind of a quick gaming origin story for those that don't watch the Wandering DMs or aren't familiar.
Oh, sure, sure. So broad strokes, I've been gaming for forever. I remember getting the Moldvay Cook Dungeons & Dragons basic set and being worried that I was going to get in trouble because it says right on the side for ages 10 and up, and I was not 10 yet. I've been role-playing forever. My day job is in video game development, which is kind of a little adjacent, and I've worked on plenty of RPGs and such like that. So I'm very used to having people around me who are into role-playing tabletop. So I started really focusing. The blog got rebranded to Paul's Game Blog back in 2010. Like I said, that's when I sort of decided this blog is not just a personal blog, it's about gaming. And that's when I started writing a lot, you know, just trying to marshal my thoughts about the stuff I was working on, the games I was running and whatnot. And then about 5 years ago started the podcast Wandering DMs, which is streamed live on Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Twitch. And it's me and my partner, Dan, who's an old friend that I've gamed with for forever. And, just one of those funny things that was born of us going to conventions together because we now live far apart. And we would get into these, I don't want to say debates, maybe just lively discussions. And everyone kind of enjoyed hearing us talk and kind of bounce off each other and said, like, we had a really good rapport. We should do a podcast. And so there you go. That's what we started doing. I've published a couple of things on Drive-Thru and DMs Guild, small projects here and there. But this Kickstarter is really my first big push. And it's really just, it's a passion project. It's a game that I love playing. It's what I run when I go to conventions to run horror games. And I just want to see the thing in print. I'd love to have a physical book and physical cards in my hands that I can slap on the table and say, this is a thing. It exists. You can buy it if you want. And we're going to play it.
Very cool. And it's interesting because now, I know from watching Wandering DMs that you're kind of and like you mentioned, you're kind of a BX guy and you've played various editions of D&D, but kind of when it comes to D&D, you're still pretty much a BX player at heart, I think.
Yeah, it's true. I have this kind of theory. My streaming partner, Dan, the Wanderer on Wandering DMs, he's big into the original edition, the old white box. And he came up with something he calls the original edition Delta that he really loves. And I basically play that now. And that's generally what I bring to the table when I'm going to play D&D. I have this theory that old school D&D and like modern indie games are more similar to each other than either is similar to the current modern zeitgeist of traditional RPGs.
I think that's true. I think there's a lot to that. But it's interesting. So for Fearful Ends, so I guess we'll switch and start talking about the Kickstarter.
Sure.
Now, this isn't like an OSR game at all, though.
No.
D&D based at all. This is kind of its own thing, and kind of you've gone through and developed this. You know, I mean, obviously there are influences here or there, but maybe talk about the process of building a game.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This was born of me getting into horror, which came pretty late, actually. I was not a horror gamer in my youth. You know, mostly stuck to fantasy and adventure stuff. And I go to conventions a lot. I've gone to some of the bigger conventions like Gen Con or Gary Con, and I go to a lot of the local smaller gaming conventions around here in New England, every year. And I kind of wanted to dabble my toe in horror. I had a lot of friends who were playing horror games, and they would run, you know, Call of Cthulhu or, you know, variations thereof. I think there's, you know, so many good horror games that I played. I played some Dread. I played some it's not quite horror, but I really enjoy Jason Morningstar's Fiasco. So playing a lot of those games. But in horror specifically, what I found was I really wanted this experience for my characters to have this arc, right? Like, especially in a one-shot game that you're playing at a convention. I wanted to sit down at the table and play the character who is discovering the horrors in the world and then becomes overwhelmed by them and reacts in a dramatic way, right? Whether that's just completely losing his mind or, absolutely rushing in to become the hero and tragically failing miserably, as they often do in these games. But I wanted that nice big dramatic arc, and it just wasn't happening. I found that it was kind of fighting a lot of the mechanics I was seeing. If you look at like a game like Call of Cthulhu, usually what you have is you have sanity points, which are kind of like hit points, and you're losing them as you experience the horrors. And one of two things happens, either nothing, right? I lost 3 san. What does that mean? Nothing. That's kind of boring. Or something really unfortunate, which was, okay, you've gained an insanity roll on this table, and the table is full of things that are just like clinical terms of mental illnesses. Good luck figuring out what that means. Now you have schizophrenia or agoraphobia or something, you know, try to remember from mass media, you know, maybe I'm going to draw out from the TV show Monk and try to portray some behaviors I've seen on that show and maybe be really insulting to the person across the table from me whose uncle has agoraphobia, right? They just wasn't giving me enough instruction or enough power to control that arc. So I started developing a mechanic that would eventually become the mental stress cards that are in Fearful Ends. And originally this was just going to be a replacement mechanic. I thought I'll run Call of Cthulhu or something similar to that, and I'll just replace the sanity mechanic with my mental stress cards. And the point of these cards is they're meant to replace that mechanic. So like when you experience horrors, you draw and have to draw and play cards. Excuse me. and then as you're playing these cards, they're giving you instructions about specific behaviors to role play, and they avoid clinical terms, and they very much are rooted in kind of normal stress responses, things that any person in the world would experience when faced with overwhelming stress. And so they're broad categories, things like anger or fear or anxiety, and they ramp up over time. So the more cards you play, you start to, you know, maybe if you're playing down the anger track, you get things like little things like, oh, maybe you're going to snap at your friends. Maybe you're going to start taking out your frustrations on inanimate objects to eventually becoming truly violent. And to the point where like you just want to kill and hurt everyone and everything around you. And so the cards, like I said, there's a little bit of control in the player as you're playing these cards about when they come out and how they come out. So you can both decide like, maybe I don't like anger. Maybe that's not a stress response that makes me feel good. So I can go down a different track if I want. And I can also kind of control the pacing. And so I can play the cards in such a way that my character, you know, retains their calm if I want like to be able to solve the mystery and figure out what's going on. Or if I'm looking at the clock and I say, well, there's only an hour of this game left, I think it would be really fun for my character to snap and lose it. Then I can play in a different direction and really push towards those dramatic responses. So I developed those cards. I started bringing them to conventions and I was playing with them and getting a lot of feedback. And eventually I showed them to a sensitivity reader because I was starting to try and publish them as a product. And the feedback I got was, oh, it's great that you're thinking about sensitivity and love that, you know, you want to avoid tropes and avoid clinical terminology and really focus on honest behaviors. And he said, instead of just trying, like, the mechanic's good. And he said, yeah, I've got some feedback for you on little things you can tune here and there. But maybe instead of just making it acceptable, why not lean in? Why not make a whole game that is intended to focus on this aspect of horror roleplay in a way that is sensitive and cares about emotional safety of the players? And that's when that was kind of the launching point for going from just this little mechanic to let me write a whole horror game.
Very cool. Yeah, it's interesting because we look at most of the horror games out there. There's, you know, new games get published all the time, and especially with all the crowdfunding now, you know, Kickstarter and MakerKit and everything else, and small publishers having much greater ability to publish things with itch.io and, you know, drive-through, everything else. We have more games than we ever had before. But the big games on the scene, when we think about it, like Call Cthulhu, have pretty outdated sanity mechanics in them. You know, these are mechanics that come up a while ago, and they haven't really updated them to
you know, I looked at a lot of different games out there, and I thought I was seeing two common responses to the evolution of our take on safety and sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And that was either they were just kind of turning a blind eye, like Call of Cthulhu has had this mechanic for forever, and I'm sure there would be a huge outcry if they eliminate it from their games. And I don't blame them for not wanting to do that. And then on the other hand, I saw games like, I want to say that maybe Fate's version of Cthulhu, and I was looking at actually weirdly Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, which always had a mechanic for this in its earlier editions. In their more recent editions, they were just cutting it completely and just saying, nope, we're just not going to deal with this. We're not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Forget it. We're out. And so it felt like to me like there was a niche here of like, well, no, let's tackle this problem head on. Let's really try to solve it.
Right. And I appreciate you're doing it a way that's not going to push people away from the game, but you're trying to make it an inclusive way to approach this. Now, of course, people still are going to realize this is a horror game. So there's a little bit of buy-in and there's going to be a little bit of dangers, not the right word, but you're going to be dealing with certain kinds of subjects when we're talking about a horror game, no matter what.
Yep. Right. There's certainly risk there, and I address this in the text of the book where I talk about safety tools. And this is, we just did a whole episode on safety tools over at Wandering DMs, and kind of reviewed the various safety tools out there. And one of the ones that's built into this game is in the mental stress deck itself. I recommend that the DM read out the major categories of mental stress and just check in with the players and say, are we okay with seeing this in our game? And if not, I can just remove those cards from the deck. And then I kind of took a leaf out of Jason Morningstar again has a game called Desperation that came out recently that does a similar thing where it says, you know, if you here's some content warnings, and if you don't like these, you can just remove these cards from the deck. And if you find yourself removing too many cards, like if you my mental stress deck has six major categories, if you're removing more than three of them, maybe this isn't the game for you. Maybe you should play a different game.
Right. And I think that's very useful both for the person running the game and setting up and for the players, because, yeah, you know, it's everybody's responsibility to make sure that one, they're being sensitive to the people playing with them, but two, to be sensitive that they're not getting into a game that's going to be too much for them at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those little preambles, and I even have a page, and I went through very specific pains in this in the book, where I have a page of like, here's a thing you can read to your players at the start of the game. And I went through pains to keep it on one page so you could just open the book and have it in front of you and read this out. And I think those preambles are super important for any kind of safety tool, whether you're using X card or lines and veils or what have you. Just have a quick preamble of this is what it is and this is how it works. And most of the time I'm going to say, you're probably not going to use them. Right. And then I've heard pushback on that. Like, why do I have these safety tools? I've never seen them used. And my response to that is, well, I have a fire extinguisher under my sink and I've never used it, but I'm really grateful it's there.
Yeah, look, things like lines and veils for when I'm playing with people, especially people I've never played before, doing online conventions, things like that. It's such a great tool because because you don't know the people you're playing with and they don't know you. And you can kind of get that out.
Yeah, especially for one shots. It's very important, I think, to have some of those conversations up front. And you spend 5 minutes on this at the front of your game and you can avoid a 30 minute, you know, tense blow up in the middle of your game. That's worth it, I think.
Yeah, 100%. But let's be honest, the sanity mechanic a game does not make. So tell me a little bit more about the system. We're talking about like resolution mechanics or the characters or.
Sure. The core mechanics are very simple. I prefer very rules light games, and I want to get into storytelling as quickly as possible. It has so the system has a set of attributes and skills that are rated in dice types. This is for a long time I was using my mental stress cards with Savage Worlds for a while. So some of these mechanics are a little inspired by Savage Worlds, which I then found I had to rip out a lot of rules because Savage Worlds, frankly, is built for high action adventure, I think, and it maybe is not a great fit for horror. But it's generally that idea of, you know, you have attributes like brawn or intellect that are rated in a die type, and then you have skills that are broad categories. They're really only, I think, maybe 15 total skills in the game. And they're things like fighting or tinker or persuasion. And generally, as DM, you're calling for a combo. I want you to make a brawn athletics to jump over this ledge, or I want you to make a perception stealth roll to sneak past the guards, what have you. And then you're just rolling the two dice together, taking the highest value and trying to hit a target number, which is usually 4 on average. These are not very exciting mechanics. This is, you know, let's get the kind of, you know, foundational mechanics of what you need to play a role-playing game out there. And then on top of that, I have a perk system. So players can come up with just like quick phrases or words. I'm a scintillating socialite, or I'm the world's best phlebotomist, or whatever. And then you can tag those in if you're making a check for a bonus. Very, very simply. I think that's kind of a little bit stolen from Fate, possibly, or inspired by Fate. I should say inspired by instead of stolen. That's a kinder way to put that. the most interesting thing, frankly, actually, mechanically, comes from Jason Morningstar again. We had him on the show on Wandering DMs, and at the end of that, he offered to look at the game that I was working on at that time, which was Fearful Ends, and I sent it to him. And he was looking at my combat mechanic and he said, this feels a little clunky. It's a little complex. Why don't you do something cool like the mental stress cards? And I went, oh my gosh, it's so obvious, right? It was staring at me in the face. So we also have now physical stress cards, which are very similar to mental stress cards in the way that they're played. So the mechanic, you only have to explain the mechanic to your players once and they get it and how it works on both systems. And it's just this very simplified mechanic for, as you take damage, you draw cards from the deck and they push in an area of your body, head, torso, or extremity, and they just start to hinder your ability to use that part of your body. The combat is very deadly in this game, I will say, because the point in most of the plots of the scenarios I'm writing is you really want to avoid combat. You want to avoid danger. You're hoping to survive to the end at best, if you can. So when the tentacle horror comes up out of the deep, it's going to do a lot of damage and you probably want to run away rather than try to destroy it.
Yeah. Which is fine. You know, not all games have to be Delta Green. Not all games grab your Tommy gun and your dynamite and go after the cultists, right?
Yeah. I mean,
the hobby for more. No.
Yeah. The tagline of Fearful Ends is a horror RPG about existential tragedy. My goal in Fearful Ends is that by the end of the game, every player at the table is either lost their mind or died horribly. And usually it doesn't quite fall out that way, right? It's not impossible to survive. It's not even impossible to destroy the horrors. It's just so hard, it's probably not going to happen. And it's kind of not the point, right? The point of the game, I think, is to embrace this idea of I'm crafting a story arc of my character and how did they face the horrors and how did they react to the horrors and what is the end of the scenario for them? Did they completely lose their grip on reality and do wild things, dramatic things at the end? Did they fight until the bitter end and die horribly, or did they manage to survive and tell the tale and now nobody believes them? Right? I want every player at the table to walk away with a story like that. And that's really what I was pushing against, I think. And the reason I developed this game is because I was playing games at conventions that I thought should lead there. And I was walking away with this kind of flat feeling of, it didn't really happen for my character this time. And I thought, how many other people at the table also have that feeling? Maybe one or two of them got that cool, interesting arc, but not all of them. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard, I think, as GM to craft a story that gives that to everyone. You've got a table of 5, 6 players, and you're trying to craft a nice arc for each of them in 4 hours. It's really hard. And that's why I thought, let's empower the players to have a little more say, a little more push in that. And then everyone can walk away and say, like, oh my gosh, I had this amazing story for my character.
I'm excited for this. I backed this on day one. I watched Wandering DM, so I knew it was coming up. And you've got a number of award levels here. I think one thing we do want to stress is that the PDF awards are going to go out once this is funded and once, you know, the money changes hands.
So oh, yeah.
People are going to have this game in hand, but before the PDFs of this game, they're going to have that in hand before the end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. The digital copy is ready to go. I'm looking at a proof of it right now. That's pretty much 100% done. So by the time this campaign ends, which it will end on Halloween, because that felt appropriate to me. Once it ends, if we successfully reach our goal, then I'll just be shooting this PDF out to all the backers. Every tier level gets the PDF, absolutely. And then there's print copies, and that excites me, frankly, because it's a card-based mechanic. Yes, there's a printable version in the PDF that you can print out on your home printer. I have done that I've a lot, frankly, for a lot of my playtests, and it works perfectly fine. The professionally made cards just feel nicer. They look nicer. I really enjoy having them. So there's the print version is available, and that's an aspect of tabletop game development that I haven't done before. I think in the past, everything I've done has either been digital or print on demand. This is the first time I'm trying to deal with, working with a printer and having them ship finished product to me. And so I'm not totally sure how long it's going to take me to completely turn that around and get the print run done and shipped out to everyone. I think I was a little conservative in the Kickstarter listing about when I expected to ship that out. I think I'm currently targeting June of next year. I'll do it as fast as I can. If I can get it to people faster, I absolutely will. But I don't know what I don't know.
Well, I think it's better to be conservative in those things. Now you picked a printer that's been around since 2009. Print Ninja is not new to any of this. They've been around there. It's a verified company that does a good job. So, and that's one of the things, you know, DriveThruRPG is a great place and, you know, especially for PDS, but their print on demand, the quality is, you know, so, sometimes it's a lot better than others. We're going with a company like this. You're going to get a higher quality. The standard's going to be higher, you know, copy to copy than what I've seen, at least with print on demand from DriveThru. So
That's certainly my hope. And that's the whole reason I made the Kickstarter, you know, is I really wanted to see a good quality looking product here to sell. And I wanted to sell it at a reasonable price, frankly. I think one of the problems with print on demand is it always seems like, wow, I'm paying an awful lot for such a small book. So unfortunately, that's, you know, the only way for me to do that was to put it up on Kickstarter in hopes that I could get enough people interested that I could actually pay for a much larger print run, because frankly, the smallest print run is still pretty big.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. There are some videos up on the Kickstarter page. There'll be a link to that. I'll also link to the Wandering DMs, especially to the most recent episode. I'll put a link there. You have some live demos coming up if people are in the Northeast.
That's true. I'm going to be at Redemption Game Day in Worcester. I'm going to look at a calendar, make sure I can quote this correctly to you. When this is happening, that will be on Thursday the 19th. I'll be at Redemption in Worcester. They're doing a game night, so I'll be running a demo game there. And then I will also be at Carnage, the convention up in Vermont that I think runs from the 27th to the 29th. And actually not only I, but a couple friends are running Games of Fearful Ends. So we're going to do a big push because it's the very end of the Kickstarter. We're going to be really promoting it as best we can at that convention and running a lot of games. I myself am running several intro games that are specifically designed to teach the rules. And then a couple other GMs are running other games for folks who just want to dive in and get the full experience.
Very cool. Is there anything about this project that I should have asked you or that you want to highlight that I haven't asked you about?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, frankly, that we should talk a little bit about the recently revealed stretch goal. Because if I'm honest, the whole reason for me wanting to put this game out there is because I've been writing scenarios and I really want to publish them. And as I was writing them, I thought, what system am I going to write these against? And I looked at a lot of different horror systems and I just wasn't happy with any of them. And so I came to the conclusion I have to write my own. So several of those scenarios are ready to go. And so recently we revealed a stretch goal of the project is the first scenario, which is titled Mazes and Monsters. And it's a scenario I've been running at conventions for a while now, and it is fully written and ready to go. It'll be a 50-page booklet that will just get tacked onto all the existing tiers. So if we can hit that stretch goal, everybody gets it in PDF or print, depending on what level you're backing at. No extra cost whatsoever. And the scenario is super fun, frankly. I love running this one at conventions because it's set in the early 80s at a college campus, and you're playing a bunch of parents and educators who are investigating the disappearance of a small group of students who were involved in this strange new fantasy role-playing game that just came out. And there's nothing really quite as delightful as sitting around a table full of gamers who are pretending that they've never heard of Dungeons & Dragons. It's really very fun. So it's a little bit inspired by the Satanic Panic, and Mazes and Monsters was a book and a movie at one point with Tom Hanks in it, if you've ever seen any of that, again, about that kind of, about the Satanic Panic, essentially. So it's a little that, but like a little what if there really was some cosmic horror under the covers behind all this.
Very cool. I hope we hit that stretch goal. I'm very excited for this project. I'm very happy you were able to take a little bit of time out to join me to talk about it.
Thanks, me too. Thank you so much for having me on your show, and I hope people enjoy the project.
Yeah, definitely. So folks, all the links are in the show notes. Check it out. And Paul, thank you again. I wish you all the very best.
Thank you, Jason.
Okay, folks, that's it. I want to thank Paul again for coming on the show. I had a lot of fun talking to him. I'm really looking forward to this project. It sounds like a very interesting take on a horror game. Often we're playing people kicking down doors and doing all this heroic, pulpy stuff in horror games. But most of the horror movies we watch are mundane people. And this game is about playing mundane people. And I'm really looking forward to getting a copy of it, and it sounds like a great convention or one-shot game. That's all we have on the show today. I'll be back later in the week with the call-in show, but until then, be excellent to each other.
Your auntie or a joke about your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if I could shoot him dead. Bring on the gore, bring on the gore. Is a dice pan and your moil is by a tipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the woods chipper. Don't Don't look away. Zombies are arising and the world has gone to heck. We're living for the dying and we're dying for the train wreck.